Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoCillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Today is Sunday, June 4th, 2006, and this is show number 46. Well, I got a really big show today. In fact, it's so long that I'm going to split it into two. I'm not sure when I'll do the second half. Might be next Sunday, or if I can squeeze it in, it'll be sometime this week. Probably next Sunday. You know me. Lazy. The reason the show is so big is because this week I went to the Wall Street Journal conference called All Things Digital, or this year it's called D4 because it was the fourth year. It's hosted by Walter Mossberg and Kara Swisher. Walter is a technology columnist for the Wall Street Journal, and this guy's like super powerful. When he does an article on a new piece of software or hardware, if he says that it's good, your stock is going up. And if he says it's bad, it's tanking. He's, like I said, really, really powerful in the industry, so he gets some phenomenal speakers, as you'll get to hear. So anyway, I wanted to jump into that, but first let's get to the mail. Listener James wrote me a wonderfully irreverent email, and I enjoyed it so much I've just got to read it all to you. I'll interject in with my appropriate responses as I read, though. So James wrote, "Hey, Allison, love your show and hate that the first time I email you is to criticize. I'm sure you can take it, though." Well, James, I can take it. I am glad you love the show, but I grew up with three older brothers, so I am tough. Anyway, gripe number one. As you were trying to attempt to find Max Saber, I noticed myself cringing. To remind you guys, last week I was talking about the stupid program that I had put on my MacBook Pro that allows you to use the motion sensor, the sudden motion sensor in the computer to make the sound of a lightsaber from Star Wars. Anyway, back to James' letters. He says, "When you tried to find Max Saber, I found myself cringing. Especially since you say you're a Quicksilver freak. You could have launched it using Quicksilver or Spotlight. So on the next show, you have to promise to demo it to us, demo it for those who aren't fortunate enough to have a new laptop with a motion sensor. And I only have a lame quad G5 with 4.5 gigs of RAM." That's right. Who's your daddy? Okay, guys, I'm quoting James. That's not me talking. He says, "I'm sure your mind went blank under the pressure of being on the air. It's okay. I forgive you." Well, I got to interject here. The problem is that I actually did try Quicksilver, and Quicksilver couldn't find it. So I'm digging around. I'm going, oh, man, I'm looking in the applications folder. I can't find it there. I look in utilities. I can't find it there. And that's when I realized that I had run it from a disk image that I had unmounted before I started the show. And I kind of didn't really want to admit my stupidity. I mean, what a total newbie move to delete the disk image and then not be able to find the application. Anyway, now you force me to confess. Thanks a lot, James. Really appreciate that. The other thing is, it's going to be another week or so till I can do that demonstration, because evidently all of the thermal cycling from my MacBook Pro heating up and cooling down and heating up to such ridiculous temperatures, even though Apple said it was in spec, apparently that trashed the motherboard on my MacBook Pro. Well, I'm assuming that was the cause. But it has this really nice feature now where if I unplug it from power, it shuts off. Sometimes it takes a while, but it usually shuts off within a few seconds. So I took it in last Monday night, and it's been sitting in AppleCare, where it says waiting for part, most of the week. I've been tragically forced to go back to the PowerBook for the whole week, but I got to tell you, kind of a relief not to be working with a fajita grill on my lap. I'm hoping that when they replace the motherboard, they'll fix the heat problem as well. Let's see, gripe number two from James. While running down the list of Vista versus OS X features, you gave Vista a point for having transparent windows. Both the terminal and stickies already have this. Since this feature is at the application level and not the OS level, I think Vista should only get a half a point, or no points, you be the judge. Okay, retally and update the total on the next show. Well, personally, James, Stickies is about the stupidest application on the Mac, and realize I'm comparing it to an application that makes lightsaber sounds. I don't see any use for Stickies. And just having two applications that can be transparent, whether we need it or not, is not worth crushing their poor little spirits, do you think? I mean, come on, we won by a mile. No need to kick them when they're down. So James continued with, I'm sure you have already gotten one or both of these things pointed out to you, but I just wanted to make sure you knew how much of a screw-up you really are. Just kidding. We all love you to death. Keep up the great work. I don't know how I would survive my commute from Woodland Hills to Burbank without you, Adam and Leo. Now go wash your car. It's filthy. Well, I gotta tell you, it's a good thing he sprinkled his insults with endearments, but I had to take issue with a filthy car comment. I mean, I washed it twice last weekend, once on Friday and again on Monday afternoon. What's he talking trash about my car for? Last week, as I did my Windows Vista description, where I showed, walked through each of the different features Windows Vista is supposed to have and compared them to things that OS X already had, listener David sent in a great video from, where else, YouTube.com, and it really illustrates the point I was trying to make last week about Vista now having what OS X already has. Turns out someone took the audio from a Vista demo and dubbed it over a video of the Mac doing the exact same things they're talking about Vista now being able to do. It's pretty funny. It's not complete and it doesn't go through every detail, but it sure makes the point. There's a link in the show notes, or you can go over to YouTube.com and do a search on Windows Vista first-of-a-kind features. Well, let's dig into the first half of the All Things Digital Conference. Like I said, it's hosted by Walter Mossberg and Kara Swisher. This is the third year I've attended it, and it's just such a gas. This show is really, really fun. Probably the most enjoyable thing is the access to people who are really making some interesting changes in our industry. I really like talking to these people, many of whom I can get to talk to one-on-one. The first year I went 2 years ago, the keynote speaker was Bill Gates, and the following morning speaker was Steve Jobs. Then last year was even very, very interesting. It was Steve Jobs followed by Bill Gates. Actually, that's one of the very, very earliest podcasts I did was my podcast about last year's show. So this is held at the fabulous Four Seasons Aviara in San Diego. It's a really posh hotel. The format is interviews where they just sit in a chair, no PowerPoint allowed, and then they have an open mic section after that. By the way, if you look at my notes online, I do want to make a disclaimer. I'm doing my very best to quote accurately, and I was typing as fast as I could, but I don't guarantee that I've actually transcribed word for word what they said. So Tuesday night, the keynote speaker was again Bill Gates. I got to tell you, my biggest impression of him throughout this speech was, or the interview, I should say, was that he kept saying, "I'm a patient man." And I really got to thinking, is that a good thing in a CEO of a high-tech company? It seems to me the people that are really making big change are those who are impatient, not those who are patient. So, I don't know, that kind of left me with a odd feeling. Of course, the first thing they had to do was torture him about how late Vista was, and he kind of jumped in before they could bother him about it. He says, "People will remember how great a product is, not when it shipped." Yeah, I don't know. When you slip for 4 years, it's kind of hard not to remember that. So let's see. Walter asked, "When will there be an online version of your products?" And Bill Gates said, "Many years away." When he asked whether he was going to catch Google in search, he defended his position by saying that not much innovation has gone on in search in years. Thinking, what planet has this guy been on? He talked about what real innovation has been happening over in Korea. And I'm not sure what applications he meant, but I don't know. I think Google has been coming out with something new and interesting about every 6 months. So maybe not in pure search, but in the whole category they're in. He said it's a 5-year battle. Well, no, not a battle. He said a trek to catch up. But we have patience and the financial wherewithal to do that. There's that patience word. When they asked him about the Apple iPod and their participation in this market, he said that he needs to find a way to participate in the growth by enriching the experience. That didn't say much to me. But when he was asked about the rumor that Microsoft is going to actually build a music player, he responded, "Yes, there's a rumor." So don't know what that is. Talked a little bit about Xbox, and he said, "Well, on the first Xbox, we were a year late, bigger, heavier, and more expensive than our competitor. And we certainly didn't want to do that again. We did want it to be an online interactive experience. So what's happened is that Xbox Live is now really the center point. So this time with Xbox 360, this time we're early and we're less expensive. Walter asked whether Sony should give up, and Gates said no more than Microsoft should give up on search. One thing that was pretty cool was they showed off Office 2007, and I don't know if you've seen that, but it was pretty interesting. Bill said that the riskiest thing that they did was the 2D menu structure from the 1990s is a cage that doesn't let people see what they want. It was a scary step to get out of that, but we did it. I'll give you some more detail on that a little bit later. I thought it was about time they took some risks. I mean, you look at what Apple does. They just rip the Band-Aid off and everybody yells at them and says, oh my God, we need the floppy. You can't take the floppy away. And then we look around and realize we haven't needed a floppy in 3 years. Doing the same thing with the dial-up modem. They've changed out the PCI or the PC card slot. You know, they do this all the time and they just rip the Band-Aid off and move on and don't have to support these old things forever. So I thought the new 2D menu structure was really kind of interesting. It's kind of hard to explain, but when you start editing some text and you click on one menu item, you get a whole bunch of different things to choose from that are kind of spread across the top. Instead of menu items being hidden inside little sub-menus, they're all visible to you at the same time. It has dynamic updates of text fonts, so as you change the size in the menu, you can see it changing live. You can insert photos. I've always found inserting graphics into Word to be really, really clumsy. You have to decide, do I want it to wrap tight to the picture, centered on the picture, left, right, wherever it drops, that sort of thing. In this, he just slid the picture around and the text was happily wrapping around it. Yeah, I know you can do that in, what is that other application that goes with Keynote? I forget the name of it, but nobody uses it anyway. But anyway, they also had smart graphics in PowerPoint. That was kind of interesting, where he made like a pie chart out of something and put it in a PowerPoint chart. And then he started flipping through, or she did actually, a woman was doing the demo. She was dragging her mouse and just floating over these other options. And suddenly it would be three bubbles instead of a graph with three pie pieces. And then the bubbles changed colors and then they changed shape. And then they had lines coming out of them and then they moved around. And it was all very fluid as she just kind of slid her mouse over until she found what she wanted. I liked what they did in Excel, too. They showed a table with a bunch of different values in it, and it could automatically show you all this different kind of information about your data. For example, it had the highest values. The cells were red, the background color were red, and then the medium ones were yellow, and the low ones were green, just live. That just happened automatically. They also had little trend markers, if the value had gone down, it had a red arrow next to it. And if it went up, it had a green arrow. And if it was kind of sideways, it would be a yellow arrow kind of at a diagonal. So a lot of good visual effects to show you quickly what your data is doing. And I've always been a big believer in data is just piles of numbers, but information, getting information out of data is much, much more difficult. So anything that gives you a visual cue to what the information is doing is really cool. So I really like that. He also said that the column headers stay at the top when you scroll. Thank you. That is fantastic. Very, very cool. Bill didn't see any future in moving Office online, though. He said you really need the responsiveness. He said you can't work offline if you only had an online application. And things like this new hover effect that was changing the shapes of the graphics really requires a fast processor. They talked a little bit about digital music, and Gates said, well, you know, you'll lose it if you don't store a copy somewhere, and there's no other way to do it. And Walter said, well, iTunes lets you have it on 5 Macintoshes. And he said Macs, but it's actually 5 PCs or Macs. And Bill Gates said, well, yeah, but it's really complicated to do that. And Walter said, no, it's kind of like one menu pick to deauthorize, and 30 seconds later, you can click authorize on the other computer. Bill said, well, my point is the music isn't there on the fifth machine yet, but, well, you can get it. So anyway, I thought he was kind of pissy about that. But he talked a little bit about subscription for music. He said the real question about subscription is, will it get the people who would have bought more, or will it have the people who would have bought less? So if they would have bought more and then they do it in a subscription service, that's a bad thing. Or if they would have bought less and then they use a subscription, they use more, that's a good thing. But that hasn't really been figured out yet. Walter asked him about the tablet PC. He said 2 million of them have been installed, both in medical and insurance, and they haven't hit the sweet spot with students yet. And he also added, I'm very patient. There it is again. When asked about online video, Walter asked him about things like YouTube, streaming shows, and that sort of thing. And he said, why isn't Microsoft, big in this environment? Well, Gates talked about something he called MSITV. He said it's a long project and will blow away the network model, but he's willing to wait a long time for success. I don't know how much longer he thinks the environment's going to wait for him. It was kind of funny. He mentioned that he watches Feynman lectures online in the Harlem Globetrotters. Richard Feynman is my favorite physicist, as it turns out. Anyway, that's a long story. Gates said that the broadcast television model was a hack. And I'm not quite sure what he meant by that, but he didn't think it was going to survive, that's for sure. If you don't give people what they want, when they want it, you're done. Well, that's true. Don't know what he's doing about it, though. He did talk about OneCare. That's the service where they're going to keep your computer clean for a fee. And there's a lot of controversy about that because it's kind of an obvious conflict of interest. Like, well, wait a minute, you built an insecure operating system and now you're going to charge me to keep it from getting infected. That doesn't sound so good. But he defended it by statistics like 1/3 of individual users have an active security system. Only 1/3. I can believe it, though. That sounds pretty believable. And he said that less than 20% of the people are actually doing backups regularly. They need to be protected because they won't do it themselves. Well, I can vouch for that. I didn't start doing backups myself regularly until it got real easy with, what is that application I have? Oh, I can't even remember. Well, anyway, I think I can certainly believe that. A big excitement for me was after the show, we went out to dinner and out on the patio. And I decided to go up and chat with Bill Gates. Now, you might have thought that I would have ragged on him about how the Macintosh is so much cooler than the PC, or I could have talked to him about what horrible software I think he builds, like PowerPoint written by Satan, or I could have talked to him about his horrendous business practices. But I did something else instead. I walked up to him and I shook his hand and I thanked him for what he's done for global health. As much as I complain about their monopolistic approach to business and all that, you just got to give this guy his chops for what he's doing to eradicate certain diseases. I don't know if you know about this, but he's not just giving his fortune away to these different foundations and stuff. He's actually dedicated himself to trying to get rid of specific diseases, diseases that if we just put money on the problem in the right place at the right time, we could provide the vaccines to people who are dying today of illnesses like diphtheria that in the civilized world, you just don't even know what they are anymore. So he's really doing some genuine work to save human lives, and I decided to give him some applause for that. If you're interested in reading up on the work that he's doing, there's an interesting interview at guardian.co.uk. There's a link in the show notes straight to the article. It gives you a good understanding at a high level of what Bill and Melinda are doing, and it's pretty compelling reading. It does say in there that much of his money there is going to research efforts to find vaccines for AIDS, malaria, and childhood killers that affect the poorest countries. His latest and biggest donation of $750 million will help the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization that he was instrumental in setting up. So dinner was fun. And on the way there, I met a guy from Adelphia, and I have Adelphia cable, and I told him how wonderful my Adelphia cable modem service is. I mean, it really does hold up well. Probably had to call him 5 times in 7 years, I think. And that's when he told me that my part of Adelphia is being sold to Time Warner. Oh, no. Well, no worries, though. On the way out of dinner, I met a guy from Time Warner who said he was going to take care of me. He's in charge of the local efforts out here. He said that we're going to have rich video content and all kinds of cool stuff. Another great high for me. You know how whenever I get a new country to the NoCillaCast, I always post a link on the website where I let you read up about the country and give you some details about it? Well, the site I'm linking to is called answers.com, and I'm just a huge fan of this site. It's really, really a nicely organized site and really solves a problem for me. Well, after dinner, you just kind of walk around and, shake hands with people and introduce yourself. And so I walked up to this guy, and it turned out his name was Bob Rosenstein, and he just happens to be the CEO of answers.com. Isn't that cool? He was the guy who made it happen, and I had a great time talking to him and this other guy, Mark, who's a venture capitalist who's on the board of Answers.com. It was really neat to get to talk to these guys and how they figured out they wanted to do it. It was really enjoyable. And I bothered Mark a lot during dinner about questions about venture capital, since I don't know anything about venture capital, so that was a lot of fun. They were both very gracious and entertaining, and I found out later on, it was kind of funny, about 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock, something like that, getting a little bit late, and Bob says, "Whoa, man, I'm really tired. I got some jet lag going." And I said, "Oh, really? Where'd you fly in from?" And he said, "Jerusalem." I'm thinking, I get jet lag when I go to Texas. What's it like to come from Israel to California? I mean, that's like 3 days worth of jet lag. Pretty crazy. So let's see, the speaker the next morning was Howard Stringer, the CEO of Sony. Now, this is kind of funny. He's got to be like 6'5 Welshman who's now in charge of a Japanese company, first non-Japanese person ever in charge of Sony. So he certainly doesn't look the part. He was a very, very funny man, fabulous delivery. Just really enjoyed listening to him talk. So Walter starts out the interview by saying, "Well, Sony sucks at software. What are you doing about it?" And Stringer said that they have great embedded software, but not good application software. He said application software has always kind of been somewhat of an afterthought. He said that they've hired Tim Schaaf, who was the senior vice president at Apple. He said that Tim is self-deprecating, calm, thoughtful, and that works really well in the Japanese culture. He said he's been accepted by the software developers, which really is going to help out. Walt asked about the iPod, and he said, "Is it too late to significantly dent their share?" Stringer said, "Well, we may dent Apple in Japan for nationalistic reasons, but that doesn't help across the world. He said the Sony Walkman phone is very popular across the world, though. They have about 3 million sold, but it doesn't work very well in the U.S. because of the confusing cellular network issues in the U.S. He got that right. He said Apple's doing that kind of thing, too, a music phone. He said they're going to have a phone that pushes email soon, too. But he said, and I quote, "I don't think this will keep Steve Jobs sleepless." He said to buy music on this phone is a fairly awful service called Connect, which is a two-headed Hydra monster. Thought that was pretty funny. They did a tech demo of the Sony Reader, which it was weird. He kept calling it the e-reader, and that's not actually its name. I talked to one of the guys that had it in his hand, and it doesn't even say reader on it. And he showed me where actually it does. It's in kind of relief letters, barely noticeable. And even though the CEO kept calling it the e-reader, it's actually just called the Sony Reader. But all that aside, I think the form factor of this thing is really good. Basically, it's an electronic book. It's probably a little bit bigger than a paperback in cross-section, but it's very, very thin, maybe like a half an inch thick. It has a little plastic cover that goes over it. And it's interesting because it uses a special kind of printable ink, I think they call it, where it doesn't have any kind of backlight. So the battery life is like 25 books or something like that. And it only uses power when you actually change the page, which is pretty cool. So it can last just forever and ever and ever. It one thing you can do that's pretty cool, too, is you can change the font size. And one of the guys pointed out, they pay a lot of money to get large print books for the people who are visually impaired. And this would solve the problem because you just get on an e-reader. You pay the same price as somebody who can see really well, and you just pump up the font size. So that's pretty cool. The text is very, very sharp and clear. He said that the cost is going to be about $300, but the publisher is going to save a lot of money on publishing costs and paper costs, so they're hoping to get the publishers to help him out with the price. He said that the reason they haven't come out with it yet is he wants to make sure the download process is seamless. He says they've already got tons of content, that's not the problem, and he said this is the last chance to make this idea work. So many electronic books have been tried and never succeed. And so he said, we've got to make this one work or this is our last chance. The music, the store, by the way, for buying books looked very iTunes music store-ish. It looked pretty clean. It looked pretty nice. So let's see. Walter asked about music service. He said, how's the music business? How is it to own one of the four biggest entrants in the stupidest industry in the world? He didn't like that question very much. He said they're increasing CD sales, and they tried to create a download process that was 100% secure, which is not what the customer wants, it turns out. And he says it's all about the customer. Kind of, I inferred from that that he was saying that that's not the way they're going to go in the future. Then Walt said what we were all thinking. He asked him about the Sony rootkit. I don't know if you guys remember that, but that was where Sony BMG, the record arm of the company, put a piece of software on the music CDs that would actually install what's called a rootkit on your system. And a rootkit allows nefarious people to dig into the back door of your system and plant bad things on your computer. So it was a pretty big disaster for Sony, certainly from a marketing standpoint, not what you want to do, and infuriated many, many, many customers. And there's probably still quite a few customers out there with this open hole in the back of their computer, basically. Stringer kind of weaseled out when it got down to this. He said, Walter said, how did this happen? How did it go so far? And Stringer said, well, it didn't go that far. Nobody's computer crashed. We were punished out of proportion to the crime. Well, I think not. It was essentially criminal behavior to do that, to sabotage someone's computer that had paid you for a service. So I disagree. He said it was a low-level decision, but did not abdicate responsibility. He just didn't think it was as bad as people said. He said, well, hey, we issued patches, right? Well, their first patch they came out with actually made it worse than the second one. So probably one of the funniest things that happened, though, at the whole conference was, like I said, they have open mic at the end of each of the interviews. So it gets to the end of Stringer's interview, and who walks up to the open microphone but Martha Stewart? She was so funny. I had no idea that she had a comedic sense of timing that she actually does. She was hilarious. She gets up there and she says, well, I got to tell you, I was packing for this trip and I had all my bags packed, but then I had to bring this bag too. She's got some big old shopping bag on her arm. And she says, I wanted to bring my laptop because I can't live without my laptop. But guess what? I can live without this. And she pulls out this huge black yucky power brick for her laptop. And she's got the wires hanging all over on it. And she says, this is really annoying to have to carry. She says, but guess what else? I wanted to bring my Sony camera too. So she's got this Sony camera with this huge lens on it. And she goes, but guess what? I needed the charger for it too. And she pulls it out and it looks just like the other one. It's this huge black brick, power brick thing. And she's fussing and she's got the cables hanging all over. And she says, you know what's really frustrating is these look exactly the same. But see these connectors on the end of the wires? They're not the same. Why can't these two connectors be the same? Because then I would only have to carry one of them. But wait, there's more. And she reaches in her bag and she pulls out a third one. And she says, and see this one? This one's for my cell phone. But guess what? Its connector is the same as this itty-bitty little connector on this other one. But guess what? I can't plug them in because they don't do the same thing. You can't use the same one. When are you going to fix this? It was so funny. It was probably the highlight of the whole week. It was so funny. So Stringer's answer to it was, check, please. So he did say he asked the CFO the same question, and he noted that the component division is the most profitable division in all of Sony. I'm wondering, is that where they make the chargers, and this is on purpose, that they make them all so different? Oh, it was crazy. Let's see. The next thing they had was a demo of some software called Sharpcast. And Sharpcast is called a real-time sync program. It's software that they want people to enable devices with and enable applications with. So they refer to a Sharpcast enabled application. To illustrate it, the first demonstration they did was a photo application that they put on the desktop, and it had a web-based application as well and a mobile device application. There was no Macintosh-based app yet, but there's plans for that, and it doesn't matter to the story. So basically what they've done is they've taken this application and Sharpcast enabled it. And what that means is any change you make to a photograph in the application on the desktop is automatically updating the photo that's online and automatically updates it where you see it on a web browser or you see it on a mobile device. Conversely, in the web version of the application, you can change it there where it's changing the online copy, and that's changing the one that's on the desktop. So what it's doing is it's syncing all these versions of the photo all at the same time. There's never an upload process at all. And they were really pushing for the fact that nobody ever does backups. I think we heard that one before. And we have all these precious photos that no one's keeping them up to date, and you're not tagging them, all those things. So you can keep them up online, and they're being updated everywhere. So they rotated a photo that was on the desktop application, turned it 90 degrees. And then as soon as they refreshed the web application, there it was, turned 90 degrees. They, he took a picture with it was a mobile device. I don't remember if it was a Windows Mobile or if it was a Palm Trio, but they took a picture with it, with the camera, and up and synced it, or let it sync with Sharpcast online. And the photo came in there, and the photo was instantly on the desktop as well. It was really a really, really interesting thing. He also showed, did a second demo where he showed it for contacts. He started with Windows Outlook, where he had the contact list of people the guy knew, and then he had the address book on the Macintosh, and then a contact list on a cell phone. He went into Outlook, and he added Walter Mossberg into the Outlook list, and it instantly showed up in the Apple address book. No syncing, no cables, all instantaneously. He did it the other way around from the Trio then, and it just showed up in the Mac and Windows. It was pretty amazing stuff. I thought it was pretty impressive. He said the cost is going to be a tiered service starting at a couple of dollars a month, but developers can Sharpcast enable their applications. I thought it was pretty awesome. Looked like a lot of fun. Let's see. The next speaker was Terry Semel, who is the CEO of Yahoo. Walter said they asked Yahoo and Google to come talk about the situation in dealing with China that's been in the news. My limited understanding is that both have agreed to limit their searches within China. For example, in the U.S., if you search on Tiananmen Square, you learn about those people massacred during protests in 1997 when the Chinese people believed they were becoming a free society. However, if you search for the same thing in China on Google or Yahoo, you'll be shown lovely pictures of the square featuring people waving Chinese flags with big smiles. I'm not a scholar on this subject, as you can tell, but Walter applauded Yahoo's Terry Semel for actually coming to the show. Semel immediately addressed the issue of how Yahoo was told by the Chinese government to give up information on one of their citizens, which did eventually result in his arrest. He said, "We're pissed off, outraged, and feel very badly about it. I think change can happen by giving people access to information, so access to the U.S. domain can help where it isn't blocked." Unfortunately, I have too close of an understanding of what it means to be arrested in China. The father of a good friend of mine, who is a U.S. citizen and a wealthy businessman, was arrested in China in October of 2005 on bogus charges, imprisoned, sleep-deprived, so he would sign over all of his personal holdings as well as his company to the Chinese government. He's still over there. He's not in prison, but they won't let him come home because they said his visa expired. Well, duh, you had him imprisoned. So that's a tragedy I understand a little too closely. But I did feel that Semel was genuinely distressed over what's happening and his company's role in it. And he also talked about his disgust with things that are going on in his own country. He seemed very, very sincere to me. He was very serious about it. When questioned about how Google did push back against the U.S. government when requested to provide vast amounts of information about searches in the U.S. by the Justice Department under the guise of the Child Protection Act, he said that he didn't know what Google was actually asked for, but the things Yahoo was requested to give up came with a legal subpoena, and they complied. But he doesn't know if the same thing was requested of Google. He just didn't know. Walt did ask on a lighter note. Walt asked when Yahoo was going to stop including paid-for searches within their results. Am I way behind? I didn't know they'd do that. In your regular searches, there can be paid-for ones and they're not identified? I didn't like that. Didn't know it either. He didn't get a good answer to that. Walter said, "How do I know if a result is at the top because it's really the best or because they paid you to be there?" Semel said, "Call me and I'll tell you." Kind of a smart aleck remark. And Walt said, "Okay, I'll publish your number in the journal. That'll work fine for everybody." Anyway, didn't get a good answer to that, but my overall impression of Semmel was that he was a thoughtful, caring man who does care about what part his company plays in the issues of our global society. He didn't pretend to know the answers, and he seemed very concerned. I felt like he was a man to be trusted. The next interview was Robert Iger, the CEO of Disney. Kara Swisher did this interview, and she was interested in how Disney, through ABC, is offering shows on iTunes and streaming on their website. I assume you all know that you can now buy shows like Lost and Desperate Housewives and that sort of thing online. And he said he really likes the iTunes application itself. He said he found himself using his iTunes playlist for exercise instead of listening to the radio. He's intent to put more content on the platform, multiplying the number of touch points to the consumer. That's a big contrast to companies like NBC, who will offer very little. For example, it's $1.99 for one sketch of an episode of Saturday Night Live. Not the whole episode, but not the whole show, but $1.99 for just one sketch. It's a ridiculous price. I love Saturday Night Live, and I buy a lot of the DVDs, but I would not pay $2 to watch one sketch. Kara asked him to talk about his relationship with Steve Jobs, and he said all the right words. He said he's not only a great mind, but also a great Disney enthusiast with great ideas for what we can do. I find him a great advisor. He's a board member and someone I turn to for advice. But there was something about the way he said it. It sounded practiced, and he kind of looked down at the ground when he said it. He had no passion and no enthusiasm when he said those words. I didn't really buy it at all. That was kind of strange. There was a panel with three women: Susan Line from Martha Stewart Living, Marissa Mayer from Google, and Judith McHale of Discovery Communications. The woman from Martha Stewart and the woman from Google felt they both need to adapt content beyond the TV networks. They can't forget the network audiences because that's still a lot of people. They said, you know, if half of the audience moved online, that's still an awful lot of people watching television. Martha's going to provide video tutorials on the web. For example, it'd be cool to be able to pause playback to learning how to baste a turkey, run over, baste the turkey, and come back. They're also moving into crafts, like things like scrapbooking, where they can also sell materials on the same site. Discovery had an interesting approach. They're going to make available online more content beyond what's on TV, not duplicating it, but extended content. And the example she gave was their TV show Mythbusters on TV. They're going to put in more of the science or maybe a director's cut kind of information online. Google then talked about the video services they have. They said 2/3 of it is user-created and 1/3 is copyrighted material. I got to tell you, I got issues with Google Video. I'm not impressed. You can't buy videos if you're on a Mac. I mean, why would you come up with some mutant format like, I think they call it GVI, that's Windows-specific? I put this in the evil category. The other thing I didn't like is you start watching a clip and then suddenly it goes, oh, you have to pay for this one. It doesn't say these are the paid ones, these are the free ones. You just find out after you're 30 seconds in and then it stops and says, pay me. I'm not pleased at all. I haven't tried it recently. Maybe it's gotten a little better. Last year, a gentleman named Nicholas Negroponte came in. He was out of the MIT research labs. And what he's been working on is trying to build a $100 laptop for third world countries. And this year he snuck in as an attendee, but they let him come up on stage because he had some working prototypes of the $100 laptop. The idea here is if you could bring a laptop in that, again, had that printable ink kind of technology, so it didn't use a lot of power, and just get these people online, maybe they could make some advances in their society that they don't have today. So he brought this thing in, and it only uses 2 watts. I think a normal laptop uses something like 30 watts, something like that. The device weighs about 2 pounds and had little ears that'll be able to connect into the mesh network they're going to supply. It is color, which was surprising. I thought it was going to be monochrome when he showed it to us last year. Most importantly, it's readable in sunlight, and it comes on instantly. Just open it up and it comes on instantly. Walter made a crack. He said, well, must not be running Windows. Well, of course it's not. It's running Fedora Linux. He said they're going to test these. It was a little bit of a kludgy plastic case, and Kara was messing with it, going, you know, this doesn't fit very well. And he assured them that they're going to test these things by hitting them with baseball bats, throwing ice cream on them. They're basically going to be practically mil-spec when they're done. They haven't gotten the price down to $100 yet. They're between $130 and $140 to the governments. They expect to be able to get down to $100 by the end of 2008. They're going to be launching April of next year, and he said Nigeria, Brazil, and Thailand are really excited about getting these. By the way, there's going to be pictures of all these people and all the tech demos and stuff in the show notes, so take a look if you're interested. The mayor of San Francisco, Gavin Newsom, and Helio Sky Dayton were there, and this was kind of a strange thing. I didn't really understand this completely, but they were discussing the 100% wireless broadband that's going to be available in San Francisco, and Google and Earthlink apparently won the contract. And this guy, Sky Dayton, who looks to be about 18 years old if I round up, he evidently is the guy who started Earthlink and Boing Boing, whatever Boing Boing is, but I think I've heard of it. Sounds big. And except he was there representing Earthlink, but he was billed as the CEO of Helio, and I have no idea what Helio had to do with the whole topic. But they talked a lot about how long this is taking and how it's going to take forever to get this thing up. And I wasn't quite sure why that was so interesting to come in and talk about how they haven't gotten it done. That seemed kind of odd to me, too. The interesting part was Gavin had some really good points about the areas that need to get wireless access. He said the idea is not to bring this in for people who could get it for free and, you know, have it for free today. That doesn't make any sense. But more to try to bring it to people who do not have access to the internet, but need access to the government services like student loans or low-income credit and things like that. So he talked about how the housing authority there was given 250 computers and free Wi-Fi, and they have a training program there so people will continue to learn how to get access to these services. Well, I'm going to cut it off pretty soon. I did want to tell you a little bit of a snippet here on who's going to be on next week's show. But before I do that, I wanted to give a shout out to Stu and David, who I got to hang out with a bunch last year, and I hung out with them this year. Really nice to reconnect with both of you. Enjoyed talking to you. One other thing I did want to talk about, one of the big highlights of the show to me, was the last day we had lunch outside, and I was sitting across from Stuart Alsop, who's a well-known author, technology author from Fortune magazine, somebody I really, really enjoy reading. And sitting next to him was Rob Glaser, the CEO of Real Networks. You might have heard of Real Player on your computer. Well, anyway, I went over and chatted with him, and I love this guy because while I asked him what they're doing about podcasting, I think they're maybe not doing much, but he was really interested in the topic, and he spent about 10 or 15 minutes just being excited to talk to me. He grilled me, asked me questions about why I do my podcast, how I do my podcast, how did I generate my audience. It was really flattering that he wanted to know so much. Probably my favorite part of the conversation was when he handed me his business card and said, "Well, I don't know if I can ever be of any help to you, but if you need anything, give me a call." Better hold that one for a good question. Well, on next week's show, I'm going to talk about the speech by Vice President Al Gore. Richard Sarnoff from Random House Publishing and Lawrence Lessig from Creative Commons duked it out about how Google wants to scan in all of the books in the library. That was a big, healthy discussion. Art Coviello from RSA Security and John Thompson from Symantec talk about security on our systems. There was a demonstration of the Zing music player I'll talk about. And Antonio Perez, CEO of Kodak, was a really, really interesting speaker. I liked listening to him. And possibly the funniest interview the whole time. I know I keep saying people were funny, but people really were funny. Barry Sonnenfeld from Right Coast Productions, the guys who brought us MIB, and he's bringing us the movie RV. He was really, really interesting. Enjoyed listening to him. Vinod Khosla from Khosla Ventures, he talked about how we can convert over to ethanol in our country in the near future, and I found that really, really fascinating. And finally, one of the craziest things they did was they brought in a panel of teenagers to talk about technology and, you know, what kind of things that we should be listening to them for, you know, what are they What do they think of the world? And, you know, what kind of tools and services are they using and that sort of thing? So they were pretty fun to listen to also. I enjoyed that quite a bit. Well, I'm tired. I don't know about you, but I'm exhausted. And I'm going to wind up this episode of the No Silicast. I really want to thank all of you for writing in, especially James and his sarcastic, snotty little remarks. And please keep writing with ideas and suggestions. I just love getting all the emails, so keep them coming. Email me at allison@podfeet.com as soon as you get a chance. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.